Welcome back to the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. Our topic today is daycare by mail, Stephen Harper's plan for childcare. And our speaker is Dr. Susan Prentice from the University of Manitoba. Before asking Susan to come back to the microphone to take your questions, I would like to remind you that if you want to listen again to her very stimulating presentation, you can do so on the SAGPA website, which is www.sagpa.ca. And for those of you watching on TV, you can post your comments on the website. There is a provision for that. So www.sagpa.ca. All of our sessions for the last year and a half now have the audio recorded and posted on the website. Our topic next week is new year, new leaders, and new elections. Dr. Peter McCormack will give us his take on what are the issues facing the federal government and the provincial government under a new premier. So, Susan, if you would kindly come back and take the mic. When you ask your questions, please state your name and keep the preamble as short as you can. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Dr. Prentice. Obviously, it's something very... Thank you for your presentation, Dr. Prentice. Obviously, it's something very near and dear to your heart. Speaking about hearts, mine is going quite rapidly because I have to disagree with your take. And just to understand more fully, a young mother who lives in Winnipeg, your hometown, I take it, I called my daughter during the lunch hour, and I said, Dana, what do you think about Harper's plan? She says, Mom, it's great. I'm home with little Kiara, she's two. I'm home with my baby, who's 2.5 months old. I have some flexibility. It's wonderful. And she gave me some figures, Dr. Prentice. She just moved to Winnipeg in September. She had work last year. The public daycare was $49 a day. They own in Canmore, in Alberta. They only had 8 spots allocated for 18 years, for under 18 months, and there were 32 kids in the waiting list. So that speaks to your spaces issue. She ended up going to a private center for 37. But she has only accolades for this because she is getting her check every month. She's got her little girl just for some socialization in on Thursday and Friday in Winnipeg. But the thing I think that you have raised and she has raised by our conversation, to understand that Quebec is only paying only $7 a day, she says, Mom, she says, they're great. My sister-in-law works in one. They're wonderful. You've talked about one in Toronto being 70, your sister's paying 73. Dana in Canmore, the private was 49. The public was 49. What I'm wondering about is, aren't we being a little tough on Stephen Harper? She's appreciating this $200 a month to do something with her little ones. It's choices. It's good. What has to happen, perhaps, and I'd like your comment on that, isn't there a little more that provinces should take? The other comment she made, and I don't want to lambaste Quebec, please understand me, but she did say, well, Mom, when you look at the transfer payment that Alberta gives to the province, and we look at the transfer payments coming back to Quebec, it's a priority in their budget, but it have not made them a half province. So, not to downplay that, and I know that I'm going to get time out any minute, so if you care to answer on just whose responsibility, do we have to lambaste the conservative government for doing something what some people think is good?
See if I can start. It's true that all across Canada, people pay different amounts of money. Quebec is all $7 a day, and my home province has flat fees. But everywhere else, you're up to the market. boutique care is expensive, cut rate care is cheaper, people pay what they get, and the quality often varies. And it's certainly true that most centers have long waiting lists and that lots of people who want to get in can't. I'll use myself as an example. When I was 11 weeks pregnant, very organized, I started phony daycare, and I had a 2-year waiting list. I had the money, I wasn't even out of my first trimester, and I didn't get a daycare space till my daughter was 2. And that's not because we can't pay, that's because there's no spaces. So building up the supply is a very important part of what needs to be done, and giving cash to parents, as I hope I illustrated, doesn't build up supply. But I am happy to hear that your daughter is happy and that she and her family are doing what they want. But I would say that if she's using a play school on Thursdays and Fridays, she's using part of the childcare system. Right? Childcare is full-time and part-time, full day, full year, full week. It meets children's developmental needs. It's not just for working mothers. So you might consider her not to be a childcare user, but I do consider her to be a childcare user. And in the well-developed childcare system I'd like Canada to have, we'd have full and part day programs precisely for people like your daughter. And of course families are happy to get a check. I'd like a check. My children are 8 and 10. They're too old. They're over 6. And so I don't think that it's reasonable to think most people wouldn't like it. But if you're trying to build a child care system, it's an irrational way to build a child care system. But I do hope that in my comments I did say that I like family allowances, and I'm glad the country has one back.
Thank you. More questions?
I'm Bev Mundell-Atherstone. Thank you very much for your very interesting and certainly insightful talk, with lots of research data. I just want to say when I first came to Canada with my husband in 1969, I'm from the U.S., but I am a Canadian now. this is my chosen country. I was just absolutely amazed when a check came in the mail in my name for $8. And in 1969, $8 paid for food for the three of us for a week. And that was absolutely fabulous. So I have to say that system, the whole social system in Canada blew my socks off, and I could go to the doctor anytime and take my little baby to the doctor. That was fabulous. So this is one reason why I love Canada. It takes care of its people. When I was doing my master's in Winnipeg, and I'm so happy you're here from Manitoba, my alma mater for my master's, there were three of us who had all returned. We were CUSO volunteers, and we three women were all working on our master's, and we all three had little 2-year-old boys, and we created our own cooperative daycare because we couldn't afford to pay anyone. We were all studying and on scholarships. So we created a cooperative daycare, and I think that's really what we're talking about, is how can we help to have cooperative daycares for those who really can't afford it. And I just want to, you know, because the last speaker I think was talking about middle class people or upper middle class people who have time and money and everything else, and $100 or $40 after taxes, you know, that's nice, it pays for a movie. But let's look at the people who the corporations are giving a minimum wage. People are working for $7-$10 an hour. And then if you're making $80 a day, if you're lucky, how are you going to pay for a private daycare? You know, that'll take half your salary. So it seems to me that when we're looking at the socialization and the caring for each other, we're really looking at the core values of Canadian, you know, Canadian, the way Canada was formed. And that's, again, why I love Canada. It seems to really care about people first and businesses second. But it seems like our current government has changed that around. And so I would say to you, as a psychologist, would you prefer to have children who are from families where there's difficulties in the family? Would you prefer these children to continue in the family where there are difficulties? Or would you prefer them to go out and have care and experiences in other environments? So that's just another take on the whole situation. If you can give children a very good founding in the basics of education and child development, then these children will have a much better life. Now, I realize I'm supposed to be asking a question. So it just dawned on me. Okay, so my question would be, how can we reframe? How can we reframe this whole issue? Because I think if we talk about national daycare or nationalized daycare, people don't understand the very first points that you pointed out about how these would be good daycare workers, the daycares would be registered and looked after and so on. How can we reframe it?
Well, thank you for the question, Beth. As it turns out, I am speaking tomorrow at the university on reframing childcare. 3 o'clock. The latest frame for childcare is to argue it's good for the economy. It's actually making some inroads. You probably heard this. I quoted some of the evidence. Spend now, get your money back later. Like, looks expensive, but it's okay, you'll get your money back. And there seems to be some good economic evidence to this. Lots of American studies, some Canadian studies. And so I think that's reassuring for governments. You know, we've estimated that the cost of a comprehensive, well-developed childcare system in Canada would be about $10 billion a year. It's about 1% of the GDP. It's what lots of European Union countries spend. And that makes lots of Canadians frightened, because traditionally that's been free for the large part, right? Women have done it in the home, not for pay. And so we're not very used to the idea of something that's been out of the economy coming into the economy. And on first blush, it just looks too expensive. But as you pointed out, there are lots of good reasons for it. Good quality childcare does help children. There's lots of evidence that tells us that. It's particularly good for children who are disadvantaged by family poverty. Lots of five-year-olds come to kindergarten not very school-ready, and good early learning programs can help them and can help give them a boost. It's also very good for women. I mean, if you ask most working mothers what life is like and you lift the veil off, it's a very stressful juggle to keep work and family both going. And there are consequences to that strain. There are health costs. There are productivity costs. There's days lost at work. That's why the Conference Board of Canada, which cited the $2.7 billion a year lost to work-family conflict. So the point is, it's going to be worth it in the long run, and we just have to get on with it. It's not really an option anymore. It's the 21st century, and 3 out of 4 women are in the labor force, and we can't rely anymore on what used to work at a different time in a different place.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lisa Lambert. I'm giving you a ride afterwards. I should have pointed myself out earlier. I have 2 children, age 6 and 7. My youngest son was born 3 months before I could have had a 1-year maternity leave. I had a 6-month maternity leave. At the end of that maternity leave, I had spent the entire time I was pregnant and the entire time I was on maternity leave looking for care for 2 children under 2. I absolutely agree with you, supply is impossible. I was forced to quit a full-time government job with the government of Alberta and take a night job working at far reduced pay so that I could split care with my husband. I would have loved to have an extra $100 a month, but it sure wouldn't have kept me at home. I needed to have a substantial income. Supply, you know, continues to be a problem. I guess my question, though, is when I've talked about this with people, and I've been a fairly strong advocate for daycare generally, is that I find a generational split. Younger people are often saying that they know that they need this, and older people are saying, but we did it without care, and you should stay home. So there's that difference. I also find a difference socioeconomically. I was meeting with a group of young women this week who were all far below the poverty line, single mothers, and they're receiving $100 a month. And we asked them, is this really important to you? Now, these are women that are living on $600, $700, $800 a month. It is a substantial advantage to them financially. You know what they said? Keep your money. We need childcare. Create childcare. And I thought that was... I thought that was fascinating that there was a difference between what Mrs. Elzenga said and what this young woman said. And is there something different socioeconomically? Is there something different generationally? And how do we solve that?
Those are fabulous questions. I should say that, you know, stick around. There's so much we can talk about. You start pulling at this thread, and it connects to everything. I mean, childcare really is at the heart of it all. You're part of a cohort that's doing this. There's a lot of evidence that tells us in Canada that lots of two-parent families are off-shifting. You know, he works days, she works nights, or vice versa. Among other things, that's a real strain on relationships, to say nothing of the poor parent who only gets the kids, you know, during their sleeping time. So, I mean, there's lots of ways people are ingenious. They're putting it together, but it's too hard. It's too hard for most families, and I'm sorry you lost a full-time job with good benefits. There is likely a generation gap. I think, too, there's a sex gap. I mean, lots of our politicians are men who had stay-at-home wives. They tended to be professionals or better, and they had women at home taking care of their kids, and they just don't see why it still doesn't work. So I do think that's the new normal of two working families is hard to fit in. But yes, I do think there's also a socioeconomic dimension. I think that it's fascinating that your low-income women said the money's important, but we'd rather have services. I think that's a very important insight. This is back to my point about being shoppers. Right? The market serves some of us very well. It gives us, some of us, maybe many of us in this room, lots and lots and lots of choices. But it doesn't work that way for everybody. And so, you know, you can call institutional childcare cookie.